Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Artis. This is the Dr. Artis Show, and I hope you enjoyed part one of how to heal brain injuries, brain trauma, with our interview with the NFL Hall of Famer, Mike Singletary, the great Chicago Bear linebacker who won a Super Bowl in 1985, has become a dear friend and trusted colleague. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, because now I'm going to dive into what does the medical profession tell everyone about traumatic brain injuries. And I'm going to teach you what the medical profession has been able to prove, actually, that there's four basic nutrients or elements, four or five of them, actually, I'm going to present to you, are published to help improve and reduce the swelling caused by brain trauma, including concussions, CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is what the term is for multiple concussions, like in the NFL, you've heard a lot about. And their long-term effects. So let's dive in. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mike and I, and I look forward to sharing this presentation with you as a part two of how to heal brain trauma. So let's dive in. For those of you that are new to the show, you can scan the next QR code I'm going to put on the screen. If you scan this QR code, you want to be notified when we have a new podcast coming out. I only do these once a week, so you're going to see once a week a podcast with a specific health narrative, a topic either in the current media or whatever, found in history. And I'm going to walk you through what the medical profession teaches you about a certain condition. I will show you the most common drug, therapies, modalities, surgeries, procedures, whatever it is they recommend. I will show you their greatest risks, their greatest side effects, and then I'm going to walk you through medical research studies confirming natural solutions to the concerns we are discussing in that podcast. If you go to thedrartistshow.com, go to the resources tab, you can download every PowerPoint for every podcast I've ever done. You can download the whole PowerPoint for free. Download it, save it on your phone, save it to your computer, then send it by email to anybody you want who deals with any of these types of conditions. But we're going to be talking about traumatic brain injuries. This is the Cleveland Clinic. A traumatic brain injury, often called TBI, happens when a hit to the head or an object injures your brain. They range from mild to severe and may affect your thinking, movement, or emotions. It can cause headaches, confusion, or memory loss. In fact, if someone has a concussion in a game, for example, one of the first things they'll say is, "What's your name? Where are you? Who's your spouse? What's your birthday?" And they're trying to see if they can trigger your memory. Because if you have any very sudden memory loss, they will usually, a neuroanalyst or neurosurgeon will look at you and go, I think it's time to get him out of the game. He has a concussion. All right. So how big of a deal is traumatic brain injuries? All right. So this is from Statista.com. The percentage of children in the United States age 17 years or younger who have ever had symptoms of a concussion or brain injury as of 2020, and they define it by gender. So you see two bar graphs. The left is the boys. The right is the girls. Let's just highlight these numbers. So in the left column, that's the boys. The boys, you'll see it reads 7.7% of all boys under 17 years old in 2020, in one singular year, had a concussion or brain injury. That is 20.5 million different boys under the age of 17. All right, that's the total, 20.5 million boys live in the United States in 2020. How many girls under 17 years old had experienced a concussion or a traumatic brain injury in 2020? Well, it's 5.9%. You'll see there at the top of the blue square. And I put in the middle how many girls there were in America in 2020, younger than 17. It's 24.4 million. So the two numbers in the blue squares are the total of boys and girls younger than 17 that this represents. So then I decided to let you guys know I added these two numbers up. So this statistic we are reviewing about concussions and traumatic brain injury to young people is a total of 44.9 million boys and girls in 2020 in America alone. That's how many kids, boys and girls, there were total. Now, if you look at the two percentages, the arrow is connecting both of them. You see 7.7, 5.9. That total is 13.6% of the 44.9 million you see to the right. So what is that total? 13.6% of 44.9 million kids. How many kids in 2020 alone in 12 months had a concussion or a traumatic brain injury. That's 6.1 million children. I did the math. I used a calculator. There you go. So this is 6.1 million children younger than 18. Then I wanted to know, well, how many adults? I found this statistic even closer to this current time period, 2025. We are in 2026 now. Read this one. The percentage of adults in the United States who had symptoms of a brain injury after a blow or jolt to the head as of 2025. Well, you'll see I put in red what the percentage is, and that percentage reads 31% of all adults. Well, how many adults are there in America? 250 million in 2025. All right, so what is 31% of 250 million? That's 77.5 million people, adults older than 18, had symptoms of a concussion or a brain injury in 2025 alone. So do the math. That's 77.5 million plus 6.1 million children. You're over 83.6 million people, young and old, have had brain injury or concussions in 2020 and 2025 alone. So this is a lot of people. How many people live in America? 340 million. What is 84 million? A percentage of 340 million? It's almost 5%. At least I think it is. No, it's even way more than 5%. What is that total? Man, I did that math way wrong. So it's a lot. Whatever it is, 10% of 34 million of 340 million is 3.4 million. Holy cow, that's a lot. 20% would be 6 million. So you're looking at a lot. 60 million. Yeah, it's like 25% or so. I'm doing terrible math here without a calculator. All right, just know it's a lot of people. All right, per the CDC, traumatic brain injury and concussion. Oh, just so y'all know, the most common cause, the CDC says for traumatic brain injury in all of America, the most common group of people to have a traumatic brain injury of any kind, including a concussion, are children, young children, and senior citizens. The number one cause is simply falling. So while kids are learning to walk, hit their head. While they're playing at recess, hit their head. And then senior citizens, they fall and hit their head. These are the number one causes. Number two is sports injuries, like we talked about with Mike Singletary. All right, so let's make sure I didn't miss anything. This is traumatic brain injury data per the CDC. They write here, there were approximately 214,000 traumatic brain injury-related hospitalizations in the year 2020. So these are people being hospitalized when they hit their head. And 69,000 traumatic brain injury-related deaths in 2021. Well, that's a lot. This represents more than 586 traumatic brain injury-related hospitalizations and 190 traumatic brain injury-related deaths every single day. That's why this show is so important, because I'm going to show you some antidotes. It's going to be amazing. People aged 75 years and older had the highest numbers and rates of TBI-related hospitalizations and deaths. All right, so it's not just the young. More people were hospitalized. More people died from concussions and head injuries who were older than 75 than any other age group. It was not the NFL. It was not Major League Soccer. It was not Pee Wee League football. It's the old people. It's you. I'm talking to you and your parents and your grandparents. This age group accounts for 32% of traumatic brain injury-related hospitalizations and 28% of all related deaths related to traumatic brain injury. Males, because we're clumsier, were nearly two times more likely to be hospitalized and three times more likely to die from a traumatic brain injury than females. So if you're going to hurt your head, I hope you're a girl. That's what you're learning here. Traumatic brain injuries. This is per the NIH. A traumatic brain injury refers to a brain injury that's caused by an outside force. A forceful bump, a blow or jolt to the head or body can cause it, but not all blows or jolts to the head result in a TBI. Some types of traumatic brain injury can cause temporary or short-term problems with brain function, including problems with how a person thinks, understands, moves, communicates, and acts. More serious TBIs can lead to severe and permanent disability and even death, as you're learning now. Some traumatic brain injuries are considered primary, meaning the damage is immediate. Others are considered secondary, meaning they can happen gradually over the course of hours, days, or weeks after an injury. For example, I remember a little girl here in Dallas, Texas, was attending a Dallas Stars hockey game, professional hockey game. The girls in the stands gets hit with a puck that went over the wall in the middle of the game and hit her in the head. She goes to the hospital. They check her out, send her home the next day or that same day, send her home because they didn't think anything else was wrong with her other than just getting hit in the head. Well, she goes home and then ends up dying. Sent home early because they did not do adequate tests, diagnostic tests, MRI, CT scans to look for a brain bleed. They missed a brain bleed and the girl died. This would be considered an example of a secondary TBI. It's hours, days later that they're seeing the final results. It's not immediate. There are two broad types of traumatic brain injuries, penetrating TBI. So penetrating means it goes through the skull. This happens when an object pierces the skull, such as a bullet, shrapnel, or bone fragment, and enters the brain tissue. A non-penetrating TBI would be the opposite. Also known as a closed head injury or blunt traumatic brain injury is caused by an external force strong enough to move the brain within the skull. Causes include falls, motor vehicle accidents, sports injuries, blast injury, or being struck by an object. All right, this is very important. Everybody at home, the number one thing you're going to think about is concussions. The NFL, you hear about this thing called CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTEs. That's a real fancy name for just a whole bunch of concussions, okay? In a short period, years, couple years, several years. All right, so those are all concussions. A concussion is your brain hits your skull and it bruises. It's called a contusion. You got a contusion, a bruise of your brain. That's all it is. Some accidents or trauma can cause both penetrating and non-penetrating TBI in the same person. Signs and symptoms of a TBI, these are what you need to look for with your kids in peewee league, soccer, grandkids, nephews, nieces, your own child, whatever. Headaches, dizziness, confusion, and fatigue tend to start immediately after an injury to the brain, but resolve over time. Emotional symptoms such as frustration, irritability tend to develop during recovery. TBI in children. A child with a TBI may display the following signs or symptoms, so look for these. Changes in eating or nursing habits, persistent crying, irritability or crankiness, changes in ability to pay attention, lack of interest in a favorite toy or activity, changes in sleep patterns, seizures, sadness, loss of a skill such as toilet training, loss of balance or unsteady walking, or vomiting. Now, just as I'm reading off this list and doing this live as I'm recording this, my very first thought is this. When you go to the third to the last bullet point, I want you to know what just flashed through my brain as I read it. And this isn't the first time I read this. Loss of a skill such as toilet training. Do you know what that makes me think of? Every parent who knows their developing child from the time it was born till it was 18 or 2 years old, gets a vaccine, and then is diagnosed with autism. Now, what is some of the things the parent who knows the behavior of their child better than anybody else on the planet, including their MD and pediatrician, what is it they notice? Typically, they stop visually locking eyes with people they're talking to or looking at. They can't look in your eye anymore. They don't focus well anymore. They often lose skills, the ability to walk, talk. I mean, these are skills they've learned, but now they've lost it. I just want you guys to recognize something. Autism, you're told, is just a genetic disorder. No, this is a traumatic brain injury to the child. These are signs and symptoms, including loss of a skill, such as toilet training, speaking, making eye contact, you name it, visual cues, being able to talk. If you lose that skill, those are signs and symptoms of a traumatic brain injury. Autism, for most, the parents will say the kid lost a skill all of a sudden. And very often, it correlates within 48 hours, 72 hours of a specific vaccine. I want everybody to recognize autism for most parents. They see a very sudden loss in skills that they've already acquired. And all of a sudden, they're reverting back like they don't have the skills anymore. That is evidence I'm showing you by the NIH, a published side effect of traumatic brain injury. So if you don't think autism can be a traumatic brain injury, you might want to learn what the signs and symptoms of both are because they can be identical. A TBI can cause problems with consciousness, awareness, alertness, and responsiveness. Generally, there are four abnormal states that can result from a severe traumatic brain injury. And the first they list is minimal conscious state. People in this state will show some evidence of self-awareness, will still show some evidence of self-awareness or awareness of their environment. Number two, unresponsive wakefulness syndrome. This is a result of widespread damage to the brain. People with unresponsive wakefulness syndrome, abbreviated UWS, are unconscious and are unaware of their surroundings. Coma. A person in a coma is unconscious, so unaware and unable to respond to their environment. And then brain death. The lack of measurable brain function and activity after an extended period of time. How does it affect the brain? It's known as a focal injury. It can happen over a more widespread area known as a diffuse injury. The type of injury also affects how the brain is damaged. The types of damage usually seen in the brain from a TBI include bleeding, swelling, and tearing that injures nerve fibers. This damage can cause inflammation, swelling, and metabolic changes. Who is more likely to get a traumatic brain injury? You are. Those older than 75 who are falling. Adults 65 and older are at greatest risk for being hospitalized and dying from a TBI, most often from a fall. I mentioned that earlier. It's not just sports. The number one cause is falling, seniors. Anyone can experience a TBI, so says the NIH. The leading cause of it is falls. Falls are the most common cause and happen most often among the youngest and oldest age groups. Blunt trauma accidents, accidents that involve being struck by or against an object, particularly sports-related injuries, as a major cause of TBI. As I joked around with Mike Singletary, how many people did you give concussions to? Because he was the object. Vehicle-related injuries, obviously. Assaults and violence, abuse-related, weapons, gunshots, explosions and blasts. In the military, service members, lots of roadside bombs can create them, landmines, you name it. Anything that has a traumatic amount of force on the head that makes the head move really quickly and the brain hits the skull. What are the severity levels of TBIs? They have mild and moderate and severe. So mild TBI or moderate and severe. So moderate is more than 75% of all of them are mild, but even mild TBIs may cause significant long-term issues. Moderate and severe, these are medical emergencies. Many develop into significant long-term health issues. Here's your traumatic brain injuries infographic. What are some of the most common mild TBI symptoms are on the left. Severe and moderate ones are on your right. So you'll see for the mild cases, which is 75% of all TBIs, this is the Cleveland Clinic. They're telling you dizziness or balance issues, nausea and vomiting, confusion, sleeping less or more than usual. Anxiety and headaches are common mild TBIs. Some of the more common severe and moderate TBIs, traumatic brain injuries, losing consciousness, he ain't moving, he ain't responding, hearing or vision changes or losses, aggressiveness, trouble communicating, changes in sensory perception, and they show you taste changes, visual changes, hearing changes, touch changes, and smell changes. And there's a summary right here. Mild TBI symptoms. We just reviewed those. Fatigue's another one. Thinking or memory symptoms may include confusion, trouble concentrating, difficulty thinking clearly, short-term memory loss. Man, could you imagine having Alzheimer's, early onset dementia? You fall and hit your head because you're older than 75, and now you experience short-term memory loss. On top of it, yeah, that'd be worse. Feeling slowed down, grogginess, social or emotional changes with mild TBIs include anxiety, nervousness, and irritability. For the moderate to severe traumatic brain injuries, physical symptoms may include passing out for more than 30 minutes or more than 24 hours. Coma, weakness in your arms or legs, problems with balance or coordination. How do you tell the difference between that and Parkinson's? Hearing or vision problems, changes in touch or other senses. Thinking or memory problems may include confusion, trouble concentrating, difficulty thinking clearly, short-term memory loss, and trouble communicating and grogginess. All these overlap with even the mild cases. Being more impulsive, you'll see at the bottom, trouble managing behavior and depression, irritability, anxiety, and nervousness. How do doctors diagnose traumatic brain injuries? Well, the Cleveland Clinic's going to tell you. They do a neurological exam, like they do on the sidelines of NFL games, imaging test, CT scan or MRI. They'll run a blood test. If you have a moderate or severe TBI, your provider will likely do blood tests and a CT scan right away. How do they manage and treat traumatic brain injuries? Treatment for a mild TBI includes rest, over-the-counter non-NSAID pain relievers, and regular checkups to watch for a new or worsening symptom. And take the supplements that Dr. Artis taught you on the Dr. Artis show at the end of this presentation. for mild cases and moderate or severe. Treatment for moderate or severe, the goal is to relieve, they might need surgery. They're going to tell you here above, healthcare providers may need to do surgery too for severe cases to relieve pressure inside your skull, remove debris from a penetrating injury like a bullet, shrapnel. They might have to remove blood clots because you had a stroke, which is traumatic brain injury. Repair skull fractures. They may place monitors to measure pressure and oxygen levels in your brain. They also will provide medications. That's shocker. Most MDs don't prescribe drugs for anything. Okay. They prescribe pain meds, anti-seizure meds, medication to prevent blood clots, stimulants to increase alertness, antidepressants, and anti-anxiety medications, of which you don't need any of those because I'm about to show you what they've learned in medicine from things that aren't drugs that do even better than the drugs. This is the International Brain Injury Association. They seem pretty legit. This ain't some tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist group. This is the International Brain Injury Association. Underneath brain injury facts, worldwide, of all types of injuries, those to the brain are among the most likely to result in death or permanent disability. Brain injury is, check this out, I did not know this till I read this, brain injury is the leading cause of death and disability worldwide. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I always thought the leading cause of deaths worldwide were cancer and heart disease. No one ever says brain injury. Ever, 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 ever. But according to the International Brain Injury Association, it is the number one leading cause of death and disability worldwide. Traumatic brain injury is the leading cause of seizure disorders. What? Okay. That means all kids with seizures? The most number one leading cause for them to have seizures is traumatic brain injury. Well, what happened to these kids to create traumatic brain injury? Vaccines, C-sections, suction cup extraction, or forceps. Easily all traumatic on the brain. Just realize here, most people with seizures and the parents of those with seizures are told there's no external factor. There's no problem here. No trauma. No. It's just genetic. We don't know what causes it. It's a genetic disorder. No. Something traumatic has occurred to the brain of your child or yourself, and now you have seizures. You're welcome. In the United States, per this International Brain Organization, 1 million Americans are treated and released from hospital emergency departments as a result of traumatic brain injury. 1 million every year. 230,000 people are hospitalized and survive. 80,000 people are estimated to be discharged from the hospital with a traumatic brain injury, while 50,000 will die. An estimated 5.3 million Americans are living today with disability related to traumatic brain injury. Did you know that? I had no idea that so many disabled people was just from traumatic brain injury. Well, they should all be on the stuff I'm about to show you. In Europe, the European Union, brain injury accounts for 1 million hospital admissions per year also, just like the United States. Well, let's look at what their prescription medications do, because there's several specific drugs like Keppra, Properol, mannitol injections here. We're going to walk you through the most common used prescription drugs to help with traumatic brain injuries by your medical doctor. Let's just walk you through what they are. Mannitol injection, its actual brand name is Osmetrol. Mannitol is a diuretic that is used to reduce swelling and pressure inside the eye or around the brain. So if you've had trauma to the brain, you have swelling on the brain, they're going to make you pee more with mannitol injections to try to get the extra water out of your body. This is what it looks like. Important warning, that acts as a bronchoconstrictor, bronchial tubes in your lungs, constriction, and may cause severe bronchospasm. Everybody out there, just know, your head might hurt. But as they're making you pee to reduce the pressure in your brain from a traumatic brain injury, they're telling you you might have severe asthma attacks as a result. My head hurts. That's a mannitol side effect, just everybody knows. That's a black box warning that the FDA requires the makers of mannitol to put on their packaging. All right. Mannitol side effects. Swelling in your hands or lower legs, rapid weight gain because it affects your kidneys, which is where you urinate from. So when you take a diuretic, it's forcing your kidneys to release more water and urine, and it shuts down your kidneys as the drug accumulates in your kidneys. That's why you see swelling in your hands and feet with everybody on a diuretic. Lasix, hydrochlorothiazide, mannitol. little or no urination. That's because the drug also can shut down your kidneys' function because it's toxic to them. While some people will pee a lot, some people will stop peeing, and then that's going to make the pressure in your head worse. Shortness of breath, wheezing, chest pain, headaches, seizures, which is a traumatic brain injury side effect. So just know mannitol might make you have a seizure. Painful or difficult urination, pain or bruising, dehydration symptoms, which are all the ones related to TBI, signs of an electrolyte imbalance, which is dehydration, which is why our Hydrate Complete is on this planet. Mannitol side effect, cardiovascular events, the same drug used to reduce swelling in the brain. It's a diuretic to make you pee. Read it. Cardiovascular side effects have included hypotension and tachycardia, venous thrombosis, veins with blood clots in them, phlebitis, really painful veins, extending from the injection site. Anyway, keep going. Let's go to respiratory. Respiratory side effects have included pulmonary congestion and rhinitis, a runny nose, metabolic. It can cause acidosis, electrolyte imbalance, Hydrate Complete, everybody. Nervous system side effects have included headaches, convulsions, those are called seizures, and dizziness. It's a side effect of mannitol. And then it also includes, if you take this drug, which is a diuretic drug, it could cause urinary retention. Well, that's an oxymoron. That means it doesn't always work. What about hematological? Thrombophlebitis, blood clots in your veins with painful veins. They hurt, usually in your leg. Other side effects include dry mouth, thirst, edema, arm pain, chills, dehydration, renal, acute kidney failure is a side effect of mannitol. That's very interesting. Stay with me. I've already shown you multiple evidence here. Mannitol is a diuretic to make you pee more often. Diuretics are designed as drugs to make your kidneys pee more. But that drug is toxic to your kidneys, and it will stop some people from urinating, and it is also known to cause acute kidney failure. I guess a kidney transplant is right for you and better for you. Extravasation. I don't even know what that means, but this is a local side effect. Check this out. Extravasation refers to the leakage of fluid, such as blood or medication. Your blood in your veins will leak out into your body. Medications in your body will leak out of your veins into your body, into your surrounding tissues, and may lead to complications like swelling or tissue damage. That is a side effect of mannitol. Dermatological. It includes urticaria, little bitty rashes all over your body, and necrosis, death of your skin. Mannitol also has blurry vision as a side effect. What about propofol? Propofol slows the activity of your brain and nervous system. Diprovan or Propovin are the name brands of propofol used for traumatic brain injuries. Well, let's show you some of the concerns. So 75% of people who take propofol for traumatic brain injury will experience hypotension. Now, when you see the word hypotension, this doesn't mean your blood pressures came down a little bit. The true definition of the word hypotension means a lethal lowering of your blood pressure. Your blood pressure drops so low, your brain doesn't get any oxygen, you die. 75% of you will develop lethal, life-threatening low blood pressure from propofol. Hypertension, high blood pressure in 1 in 10, and then cardiovascular changes in your rhythm of your heart called bradycardia. And then look at 1% of, that's in 1 in 10, by the way, but then look at the uncommon up to 1% of all people. Remember, there's millions of people who get traumatic brain injuries and go to the hospital every year in America, and they're all getting this drug, propofol. The majority of them are. The majority of them, millions of them, at 1%, that's possibly hundreds of thousands, if not millions, will develop, read it, atrial fibrillation, arrhythmias, atrial ventricular heart block. Look below there, the second line to the right, myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack. Cardiac arrest is before that. Your heart just stops. Is that better than having brain swelling? I don't know. I think there might be some better options here than this one. Ventricular fibrillation at the bottom, tachycardia, pulmonary edema, cardiac failure, cardiac arrhythmias, all of them are listed as side effects of propofol. So just know, anybody being treated for a traumatic brain injury, look for horrible heart side effects or death. Death, by the way, may be an answer for some people with severe traumatic brain injuries where their head hurts so bad. Maybe they prefer that. Maybe they'll be begging for that. And then they'll do medically induced suicide with, you know, all the drugs they use for hospice and palliative care. They know how to kill you with morphine. They know how to kill you with Presidex, midazolam. They know how to kill you with lorazepam. They know how to kill you with those things. Presidex, ask your doctor if medically induced suicide is right for you. Because they're going to bill your insurance for it. They're going to make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Called palliative care and hospice care. Pruritus, 28% of people will develop that with this drug, propofol. 10% will develop vomiting and nausea. Urinary retention, that doesn't help with the pain and swelling in your brain. Hepatomegaly is reported. That's enlargement of your liver, so liver toxic. Up to 10% of all people will develop burning, tingling, stinging sensation where they're getting it injected. Let's see, bun increase, this is kidney failure markers, creatinine increase, dehydration, hyperglycemia, high blood sugar, metabolic acidosis, which is terrible, you might die. Musculoskeletal, 1% of all you will have pain in your extremities, trunk pain, whole body weakness, pain in your extremities, that all sounds good. Nervous system, 74% of you will experience paresthesia. Can't feel my arms and legs, like I can't feel anything. Not paralyzed, you just don't feel anything. Or you might experience excitation phenomena such as involuntary movements, twitches, tremors, hiccup in 10% or more. Headaches and shivering. Well, just so you know, traumatic brain injury, you already have headaches. 1 in 10 of you, if you get propofol, you're going to develop worsening headaches. Convulsions and seizures in 0.1% of all of you. And involuntary movements. Hypoxemia, 11% of you. Low oxygen levels. Side effect of propofol. Up to 10% of you will develop transient apnea, not be able to take a deep breath or be able to sleep, procedural pain, cough, respiratory acidosis, thrombosis, blood clots in a vein, usually in your leg, phlebitis, blood clots in your veins, painful veins. Another 10% of you will develop that too. Sepsis in 1% of all of you. Nystagmus, vibration of your eyes. Diplopia, double vision, 1% of all people on propofol. Elation and euphoria in 10% of all people. You may not be happy about the pain in your head, but you're going to act like you are. You'll be in a manic state. 1 in 10. We'll get all giggly, euphoria, elation. 1% of all people on propofol will develop ringing in their ears. Ear pain, taste perversion. Sounds like COVID. Now, Keppra is an anti-seizure drug that a lot of people are familiar with. This is very often prescribed for traumatic brain injuries because of the worry of excess stimulation in the brain from the inflammation. Keppra is an anti-epileptic drug, also called an anticonvulsant. This is what it looks like. Extremely common for those who know anything about seizures. More than 14% of all people that get on Keppra will have a headache from Keppra, not from traumatic brain injury. They've already got that headache. Another 14% of all of you are going to develop a headache. Another 14% are become somnolent, not engaging, looking in the corner, sitting there, not staring at a screen, not engaging with humans. 10% will become dizzy, vertigo, paresthesia, coordination difficulties. Psychiatric. Did you know 38% of everybody on Keppra in clinical trials developed and were diagnosed with non-psychotic behavioral symptoms? So I decided I want to show my audiences what is a non-psychotic behavioral symptom. Well, here it is. A non-psychotic behavioral change can include moodiness, apathy, changes in personality, and unsocial behaviors. These changes may occur due to various factors such as medical issues. Well, there's one on the screen, medications, stress or environmental influences rather than a mental health disorder. Right, you're learning 40% of all Keppra people will develop a non-psychotic behavioral symptom. That includes becoming non-social. My really extroverted child is now an introvert. It's so weird. Yeah, Keppra does that. And 40% of all people you give it to. Changes in personality, no apathy, moodiness. All right. The next thing they say is 17% of all people on Keppra will become psychotic. Okay. Well, what are symptoms of psychotics or psychosis? Well, here you go. Look at the bottom. Psychotic symptoms include hallucinations. 17% of people on Keppra will now start hallucinating, such as hearing voices or seeing things that aren't there, and delusions, which are strong false beliefs that are not based in reality. Like you think the government's out to kill you, somebody's outside your house, you see a tree branch blow in the wind and you see the shadow in your bedroom and you think it's somebody from the FBI or CIA outside your door going to kill you. Those are delusions. Or you go to your bank statement or you go to write a check and there's no money in your bank account and you think your employer, because they do direct deposits, are stealing the money out of your bank account because you overdrew. Those are delusions. Other symptoms can involve disorganized thinking or behavior, making it difficult to communicate or function normally. Almost 1 in 5 people on Keppra, children and adults, put on Keppra for either seizures or traumatic brain injuries, will start hallucinating and have delusions. 1 in 5. I just want everybody to hear here, those with traumatic brain injury, those on anti-seizure medication, if you develop from Keppra these two symptoms, you will later be diagnosed. When you start telling somebody you have these symptoms and they refer you to a psychiatrist, you will be diagnosed with one mental illness. They will tell you it's hereditary. They'll tell you it's genetic. They will not tell you it's a Keppra side effect. That condition is schizophrenia. Can you imagine having a traumatic brain injury, being put on Keppra, or having seizures and being put on Keppra? Then one in five children or adults start seeing things that aren't there, later being told they need to go see a psychiatrist now because your neurodegenerative issues are getting worse. And then they diagnose you with a mental illness like schizophrenia where you could be institutionalized for life. Ask your doctor if schizophrenia is right for you when they prescribe Keppra and don't tell you about its crazy, hallucinating, delusional side effects. Let's look at Keppra's hematological. These are blood side effects. 1 in 10 will see a decreased white blood cell count. Great, now you're more susceptible to every infection and developing cancer. You'll see a decreased neutrophil count. Oh, great. Increased lymphocyte counts and higher eosinophil counts. Allergies, anybody? Anyway, so it destroys your immune system. Skin reactions, Stevens-Johnson syndrome. I'm going to have to learn that one. I haven't really looked that up or studied that one often. But that comes up as a side effect in a lot of drugs. I see it over and over and over and over. Alopecia is reported, angioedema, swelling of your face. Let's look at other side effects per drugs.com about Keppra. Asthenia, 15% of you. Fatigue, 10% of you. 1 in 10 will have pain and vertigo. Increased cough, pharyngitis, and 1 in 10. Gastroenteritis, painful stomach pain, diarrhea, constipation, IBS. Is a side effect of Keppra. If you get on Keppra for seizures or for TBI and you're sent to a gastroenterologist and you tell them you're constipated, have gastroenteritis, and you have diarrhea, and they diagnose you with IBS, they're not going to tell you it's a Keppra side effect. You only learned that here at the Dr. Artist Show. Diplopia, 1 in 10. Anybody on Keppra will get double vision. Now, remember, traumatic brain... Hold up. Let's go back. Remember, traumatic brain injuries occur most often to those 75 years and older. How many people in assisted living home, nursing homes have these prism glasses to help with their diplopia, double vision? It's drug-induced, people, and this is not the only drug. A ton of prescribed drugs to senior citizens and children and adolescents, teenagers, young adults have diplopia as a side effect. Abnormal liver function tests and liver failure have been reported by Keppra alone. Neck pain, 10% of all people. Infection in 13% of all people. The flu happens to be diagnosed in 1 in 10 when you give them Keppra. I can explain that one to you, by the way, kind of. This should never make sense to you. Influenza is a respiratory virus, so suppose you inhale it into your lungs every common cold season. How is it possible that Keppra, a drug, can cause 1 in 10 to develop influenza? Well, I can kind of make this make sense. But unless the flu is in the drug, you should not be testing positive for influenza A, B, or C, unless it's in the drug. However, I just showed you the immune reactions of Keppra. It suppresses white blood cell count, neutrophil count. Well, when your white blood cell count becomes suppressed, you're easily more susceptible to any infection on earth. Anorexia in 1 in 10 on Keppra. If your friend's been put on Keppra for seizures or traumatic brain injury and they're getting really skinny and they don't want to eat, that's because of Keppra, not the brain trauma. Keppra. Acute kidney injury is also reported. Now let's dive into what does Dr. Artist recommend to protect your brain? All right. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's only one single amino acid I even sell as a supplement, and there's a lot of amino acids. I just sell one singular amino acid in a capsule on my website. And it's called taurine. There's a reason why. I know you guys have been taught and educated about taurine, but check this out when it comes to traumatic brain injury. Did you know neuroscience in 2024 published a whole research study about taurine improving function and histological outcomes, disease outcomes, and reduces inflammation and traumatic brain injury? What? Did your neurologist tell you that? Did the hospital prescribe it with your traumatic brain injuries? All right, so let's look at neuroscience, which is a very reputable, read by humans study. They're going to talk about animals. Animals with TBI, they actually are going to cause traumatic brain injuries in animals. Like hit them with something and cause it. That sounds humane, don't it? Animals with TBI exhibit a higher count of certain cytokines, chemokines, and water content swelling. Increased accumulation of reactive astrogliosis in the ipsilateral brain, sides of the brain, with evidence of neurological functional deficits. These animals don't act normal. Cortical injury, brain edema or swelling, reactive astrogliosis, as well as neurological deficits were found in the present study. Our previous literature has shown that taurine significantly increased cerebral blood flow. Hold up, remember, they want to put you on a diuretic to make you pee. Okay, I just want you guys to know, mannitol, remember the drug I just showed y'all? All right, just know here, they know that taurine by itself increases removing swelling in the brain called cerebral blood flow of the cortex at 30 minutes after you take it and 24 hours after you take it. TBI, traumatic brain injury, using the laser Doppler flowmetry and also significantly decreased the intracellular level of lactate, an inflammatory marker. Remember when you work out and your muscles are sore, that's called lactate. You've built up too much lactate in the muscles and everything's sore. The ratio of lactate to pyruvate during 7 days after TBI using the microdialysis technology. Our present data demonstrated that taurine decreased the expression of certain inflammatory markers called cytokines on days 1 after the traumatic brain injury and day seven, after the injury. They saw reduced astrocyte activation and cerebral edema after 7 days. Improved functional outcome at days 3, 5, and 7. After the traumatic brain injury. If you have a concussion or a loved one, ask your doctor if Dr. Artis's Nature Wins taurine is right for you, because it is. We therefore speculated, remember they're referencing a previous research study, so now they're looking at this research study and telling you what they're thinking, why we're going to do this one. We therefore speculated that taurine's ability to attenuate or stop the formation of brain swelling in 7 days and improve functional outcomes at day 3, 5, and 7 days after a TBI, traumatic brain injury, may be associated with taurine's anti-inflammatory effects. The anti-inflammatory actions of taurine seem to depend on its conversion to something called taurine chloramine, abbreviated TAU-CL. Taurine chloramine inhibited the production of cytokines, which create inflammation, interleukin 1 beta, interleukin 6, and tumor necrotic factor alpha. So they figured out it does that. It is anti-inflammatory. All right, now stay with me here. This is very important. I know it sounds nerdy, but for all of you out there going, I don't know if my trainer at my kid's university where he plays football, basketball, runs track, runs hurdles, trips and falls and hits his head on the track, gets a TBI. I don't know if they know anything about taurine. Well, just stay with me here. I know this is going to sound scientific key. There's two key things that leads to traumatic brain injuries and their inability to heal fast. Okay, ready? Here we go. The pro-inflammatory, those things that create inflammation, cytokines, interleukin 1 and its related family member, interleukin 18, it's actually 1 beta. They just have 18. It's actually 1 beta, 1B, are constitutively expressed in the brain at low concentrations. So these are low in the brain normally. In the present study, elevation levels of interleukin 1 alpha and interleukin 1 beta were observed in the traumatic brain injury group on days 1 and 7 after the traumatic brain injury. And the level of interleukin 1 beta was increased only on day 1 after the injury. I know it looks like 18, but that's not it. It's a typo. Interleukin 1B, which is one of the two, interleukin 1B was increased within 60 minutes after the traumatic brain injury and peaked at 2 days after the trauma to the brain. Significantly higher IL-1 beta level was detected in the brain 7 days after the closed head injury. However, in human cerebral spinal fluid, elevated levels of IL, interleukin 1 beta, were observed up to 10 days after the trauma. This is very important. They're looking at animal studies where they create traumatic brain injuries. They're referencing human beings. They said the interleukin 1 beta inflammatory marker that goes up within 1 day of a traumatic brain injury in an animal, they see it also peak at day 7. But they also see it peak in humans all the way to day 10 after the injury. Taurine lowers both of these. I'll show you. The present study indicated that taurine significantly decreased the production of interleukin-1 alpha in 7 days after the traumatic brain injury. Consistent with the previous study, that treatment with taurine stopped the bleomycin-induced increases in interleukin-1 alpha in the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid. So it just confirms again that taurine's been proven to reduce this thing that leads to worsening outcomes from a traumatic brain injury. Now, I'm going to drive this home for you. There's two markers they're studying. Taurine's benefit for speeding up the healing process from a traumatic brain injury. Elevated levels of interleukin-1 alpha and interleukin-1 beta were observed in the traumatic brain injury group on days 1 and 7 after the traumatic brain injury. Follow me. Taurine significantly decreased the production of interleukin-1 alpha in 7 days after TBI. I just want to show you this. I know it's nerdy. You have to understand why it works when your neurologist goes like this. I don't think it's a good idea for your kid to take taurine. They should only take Keppra. What? No. Dr. Artis taught me and showed me in my research studies that you can now share with them. It's on sciencedirect.com. This is out of the neuroscience journal that they all should be reading anyway and subscribing to. The very next paragraph in the research study, remember we talked about interleukin-1 alpha and interleukin-1 beta. The very next paragraph is this. We found the level of interleukin-1 beta was reduced in the taurine group on days 1 and 7. Interleukin-1 beta is the only cytokine decreased by taurine on both days following a traumatic brain injury. Well, if both of them cause the worsening outcomes long-term for traumatic brain injuries, you might want to be on taurine. This finding suggests that the neurobrain protection of taurine may be related to ongoing suppression of interleukin-1 beta in our experiment. This is how it works. So if you want to sound real nerdy, tell your neurologist working with your anti-seizure drug child or your traumatic brain injured loved one, look at the neurosurgeon, look at the medical doctor and nurse's staff and say, hey, interleukin-1 alpha and interleukin-1 beta, I know are elevated in my kid who just had a concussion. We need to put them on taurine. It's brain protective and reduces interleukin-1 beta in 7 days after for up to 7 days after the injury. How the hell do you know that? I watched Dr. Artis, don't you? Yeah, there you go. So these are the highlights from taurine. Taurine significantly improved functional recovery of traumatic brain injuries on day 3, 5, and 7 days after a traumatic brain injury. Isn't that amazing? That includes concussions, strokes, it doesn't matter, a bullet. Taurine significantly decreased accumulation of something called GFAP in the brain at day 7 after TBI. Taurine significantly reduced water content in the brain at day 7 after the traumatic brain injury, which is the whole problem. That's why you call the chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE of the NFL, that is encephalopathy is swelling, water in the brain. Taurine, read bullet point number 3, significantly reduced water content in the brain. Taurine significant, oh, by the way, without causing acute renal failure like diuretics like mannitol do that I just showed you. Let's read the last one. Taurine markedly decreased the level of 17 inflammatory cytokines in just 1 week. Yeah, you're welcome. We conclude that taurine reduced the expression of inflammatory cytokines, reactive astrogliosis, cerebral edema, brain swelling, and improved neurological function following a traumatic brain injury. Ask your doctor if taurine is right for you, because it is. And if you have a loved one who's in a sport like football or something where there's a lot of head trauma, you might want to just have them start supplementing taurine. They will heal faster if they already have it in their system. Now, the second thing we're going to talk about is something called acetylcholine. Short, we call it choline. This is actually an ingredient inside of my multivitamin for kids, our multivitamin gummy for adults. It's also in our Hydrate Complete. But you won't find it singular on our website. We don't sell it individually. All right. This is the effect of choline and a form of choline called alpha-serate. I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm just going to call it choline. On cognitive dysfunction after mild traumatic brain injury. Now remember from this presentation, 75% of all traumatic brain injuries are the mild type. And we already went through their symptoms. So here's what they found. Patients with mild traumatic brain injuries were included. The Korean version of the mini mental state examination, abbreviated KMMSE, was used to evaluate the brain function. The KMMSE test was performed on the 7th day after the trauma to the brain. the patients were divided into the choline and control groups, and there was 15 subjects in both. The choline group was administered choline, 400 milligrams twice a day for just 2 months. After 8 weeks, the KMMSE test to evaluate cognitive function was administered to both groups after 8 weeks, and the results were compared with those before the treatment. Considering the disease process of TBIs, foods with anti-inflammatory reactions or components related to cell recovery have been used for traumatic brain injury treatment. Choline is currently used in 60 countries for the treatment of acute stroke or TBIs. Why not in America? Why don't they do that? Do they do that in America? Have you seen drips of fluids of acetylcholine going into your loved ones with TBIs? Nope, guarantee it ain't here. However, it should be. In fact, I'm going to go back here. Every stroke victim I've ever seen, which is a very traumatic brain injury, choline and inositol, the first two things I put in their body. And oh my goodness, miracles happen within minutes of a stroke, which is a very traumatic brain injury. I actually had one patient who was in my office and had a stroke while out there waiting in the office. I actually made them wait. They couldn't walk, couldn't use their left leg, couldn't use their left arm. I made them stay in my office for 2 hours, and I just gave them every 5 minutes inositol and choline until they could walk again and talk again and use their arms and legs and drive back to an out-of-state city they lived in from where my office was in Tennessee. Within 2 hours of the stroke, they had full range of motion of their arms, full range of motion of their legs, complete speech was back, and they were able to drive themselves back home out of state. And yes, we did follow up, so they made them call me when they got back. A friend went with them, so it wasn't like I just left them alone. Miraculous. When the stroke happened, I asked them, do you want to go to the hospital, which was next door to my clinic? And they said, no. I said, all right, well, I'll take care of you. That's how powerful choline is. Choline is one of the choline derivatives. It consists of choline, the precursor of acetylcholine, and phospholipid, a component of the cell membrane of every cell in the human body. Approximately 45% of its oral dose of chlorine alfosphorate can pass the blood-brain barrier. In a clinical trial of mild cognitive impairment, cognitive function is improved by about 5% when choline is taken for 6 months. In the ASO-MALVA trial of dementia, treatment using a combination of donepezil and choline, the cognitive function of the experimental group with choline was remarkably preserved compared to that of the comparative group that just got donepezil, the medication. Maldonado and his team have reported a randomized trial for severe and moderate TBI with GCS scores, another way to measure mental function, of 5 to 10 in 1991. In their study, another form of choline was used called citicoline, was added to conventional treatment. So with drugs or whatever they were being given, they gave them citicoline to one group, and patients were followed up for 3 months. Patients that were given the citicoline, so just pay attention here. If you have a loved one with traumatic brain injury and they want to give Keppra, propofol, or they want to give mannitol, it doesn't matter. I'm showing you research studies where they combine these nutrients with the drugs, and you're going to read these outcomes. They're way better than the drugs alone. Patients treated with citicoline had shorter hospital stays than the control group. Citicoline patients showed significantly better Glasgow outcome scale, cognitive function, with no adverse effects reported. Trimmel and his team have treated 67 severe traumatic brain injury patients with citicoline and compared outcomes with 67 matched patients treated with other institutions. So not choline, just drugs. Citicoline at 3 grams, that's 3,000 milligrams, every 24 hours was used immediately after ICU admission. And that 3 grams of choline were given to them every day for 21 days. They found that ICU death, in-hospital death, and six-month death of the citicoline group were significantly decreased compared to those who didn't get choline. Just from traumatic brain injuries, way more people in the hospitals who did not get choline died than in the group that got the choline. Ask your neurologist and neurosurgeon if choline is right for you, because it is. And in case you're wondering how it works, in this research study, they put it up there. Mild traumatic brain injury, they tell you what it is, what the exclusions are. Give them choline for 7 days. You see the groups, you see the control group, and then their assessment 8 weeks later. At the bottom, you'll see the conclusion of their study. Let's read together, because you're not neurologists, but your neurologist should be watching this and reading. Choline after mild traumatic injury may contribute to the improvement of cognitive dysfunction. Ask your neurologist if choline is right for you. And if he's watching the Dr. Artis show, because he should. Choline improves cognitive function in patients with mild traumatic brain injuries, is the conclusion of the study. Wow. And mild traumatic brain injuries make up 75% of all of them. Now, this is the Journal of Neurotrauma. Now, I'm a nerd, but I don't contribute studies to the Journal of Neurotrauma. I'm not that nerdy. You got to have some real geniuses there, man. I'm just sub-genius, maybe. Dietary choline supplementation. Choline, dietary supplement, choline improves behavioral, histological disease processes, and neurochemical outcomes in a rat model of traumatic brain injury. The present study, dietary choline supplementation significantly reduced brain injury-induced spatial learning deficits in this mouse model during the retention phase of cognitive evaluation while they were evaluating, with a trend towards improvement in the acquisition phase. Dietary choline supplementation also attenuated or stopped CCI-induced decreases in alpha-7 nicotine receptors. I love that. There was overexcitability of nicotine receptors and choline turned it down. This is important. During COVID, the nicotine receptors you're seeing referenced there, alpha-7, were the ones that nicotine helped to prevent COVID symptoms and long COVID symptoms. But what they called spike proteins of COVID shut off the expression of these alpha-7 nicotine receptors, and nicotine turns it back on. During traumatic brain injuries, you will see overexpression of alpha-7 nicotine receptors, overexcitability, seizures, convulsions. You'll just see it. And choline suppresses it. It reduces also brain inflammation, which is the most important thing in traumatic brain injuries. Choline, and increased cortical tissue sparing. The results of the present studies are in a general agreement with others that have shown beneficial effects of the choline precursor. CDP choline is another form in humans with neurological disorders. What are other neurological disorders that would benefit from choline? Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and choline's in our Hydrate Complete, our multivitamin gummies, and in our multivitamin for kids. In this present study, dietary choline supplemented significantly blocked TBI-induced increases in hippocampal and thalamic inflammation as assessed by their whatever they're looking for in the microglia of the brain. So they saw the hippocampus and the thalamus part of the brain's inflammation go down with choline. Since choline treatment also results in significant cortical tissue sparing the cortex of your brain, which is the part of the brain that bruises during a concussion, it might be expected the secondary brain inflammation would be decreased in this group of animals also. So that's choline. We're off of choline now. Now we're going to talk about probably one of my favorite B vitamins in the world. And no, they don't even call it a B vitamin anymore, but it is and has been called a B vitamin for almost a century. This is from IBRO Neuroscience Reports, a bunch of nerdy neuroscientists. Long-term effects of inositol, myo-inositol, which happens to be a form. Myo means muscle in Latin, like fibromyalgia, right? All right, so myo-inositol on traumatic brain injury. Traumatic brain injury was induced in mice by controlled cortical impact. They just smacked the mouse in the head to cause a TBI. One group of CCI animals, those hit in the head, received saltwater injections for 2 months. Another CCI group received myo-inositol, MI, treatments for the same period, 2 months, and one group served as a sham-operated control. So then they whacked a whole bunch of other ones, and they didn't do anything to them. So they whacked a group, did nothing. They whacked a group and gave saltwater to one group, whacked another group, and then gave them inositol. The inositol treatment is linked with upregulation of genes covering 33 biological processes involved in immune response and inflammation. In support of these findings, we have shown the expression of BATF2, a transcription factor involved in the immune regulatory networks, is upregulated in the hippocampus, the swelling part of the brain from a TBI. Whereas the group that got the saline or the just mice that got in the head, check it out. If they didn't get inositol, those groups, their brains became demethylated. Well, that's no bueno. In conclusion, they say, with inositol, traumatic brain injury is followed by long-term epigenetic and transcriptomic changes in your hippocampus of the brain. Inositol treatment has a significant effect on these processes by modulating the immune response and biological pathways of inflammation. Inositol is amazing. Now, lastly, this is the last one. Last product. You've hung in there. I'm very excited. This is how to heal from brain trauma. We've shown you taurine, inositol, choline. Now we're going to show you EDTA. EDTA chelation therapy is the treatment of neurodegenerative diseases. Now, you might not think, as I show you these research studies, that it applies to traumatic brain injuries. Do you know one of the most common long-term side effects published of having any amount of traumatic brain injuries, concussions over and over and over and over, falls over and over? The number one thing they published long-term is any neurodegenerative diseases developing, including Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and MS, and dementia, or MCI, mild cognitive impairment. These are the long-term side effects of any amount of traumatic brain injuries, either one or many. So I have to show you this because it's amazing. I've already discussed this in other episodes about EDTA's ability to prevent worsening effects from a stroke in the brain, even 2 years after the stroke. That's how good EDTA is. EDTA can help correct all the symptoms, signs and symptoms of really bad brain trauma from a stroke, even if you start the EDTA 2 years after the stroke. All right, this is Biomedicines Journal. EDTA chelation therapy and the treatment of neurodegenerative diseases. All right, follow along highlighted statements. Here we demonstrate that the profile of toxic metals is similar in neurodegenerative diseases and non-neurodegenerative groups, which both display high levels of lead, cadmium, gadolinium, cesium, aluminum, and nickel, and that EDTA chelation therapy is effective in removing heavy metal burdens. Our therapeutic approach relies on the administration of 2 grams once a week. Well, I recommend 2 dropperfuls Monday, Wednesday, Friday. After 10 chelations, the therapy is able to reduce all toxic metals. Did you hear that? After 10 sessions, the therapy is able to reduce all toxic metals and to improve the patient's symptoms. Listed in the results section, subsequent chelations progressively improve their reductions, often reaching physiological levels. The therapy is well tolerated and not associated with any side effects. What? Well, that's way better than the traumatic brain injury stuff I showed you early. Keppra, propofol, and mannitol. All right, finally, in patients affected by neurodegenerative diseases, the low levels of free glutathione in your red blood cells were increased by EDTA, chelation therapy, reaching those of control patients who didn't have neurodegenerative diseases of any kind. That's pretty amazing. Now, my favorite research study. I had to throw this in here because they did a twin case study and they show it all here. Wait till I show you 2 twins, identical twins, who have the exact same DNA, and you were told multiple sclerosis is a DNA inherited genetic disorder. Well, I'm about to show you, I guess, EDTA prevents genetic predisposition from happening. Y'all should be very excited about this one. You ready? Neuron protection of EDTA may explain the successful outcomes of toxic metal chelation therapy in neurodegenerative diseases. This is in 2022. During COVID, while you were locked up and I was being told to stay at home, even though I didn't, kept flying around the world trying to protect all of you. These people were doing this research on EDTA. This is the summary. I have to highlight some of this for you. If you want to read the whole article, it's amazing. Anybody with neurodegenerative diseases, you had better be taking EDTA. It's amazing, this information. Many mechanisms have been related to the disease process of neurodegenerative diseases, NDs, such as multiple sclerosis, ALS, Parkinson's disease, and Alzheimer's disease. So anybody out there watching, if you know anybody with ALS, Parkinson's, MS, or Alzheimer's, I'm talking to you. This research paper is for you. Studies focused on the role of toxic metals in the disease progress to be diagnosed with a neurodegenerative disease demonstrate the efficacy of treatment with chelating agents like calcium disodium EDTA in eliminating toxic metal burden in all neurological disease patients, improving their symptoms. Wait, what? Did you know that? As your neurologist, who's seeing any family member you have with ALS, Parkinson's, MS, and Alzheimer's, have any of them said to you, there's a lot of studies out there that have already confirmed that EDTA, chelating out toxic heavy metals, can improve all symptoms in patients with these conditions? Have they told you that crap? And if not, why not? Because they're terrible doctors. Lead, cadmium, aluminum, nickel, and mercury were the most important toxic metals detected in these patients. If you have ALS, you have Parkinson's, you have MS and Alzheimer's, these are the metals they find in toxic levels in your body in medical research studies. Lead, cadmium, aluminum, nickel, and mercury. Oh, by the way, mercury, aluminum is in every one of the adult vaccines. So if you want to know how it got there, that's a very plausible place. Here in this research study, I provide an updated review on the damage to neurons, brain cells, promoted by toxic metals, and the impact of EDTA chelation therapy in neurodegenerative patients, those with ALS, Parkinson's, MS, and Alzheimer's, along with the clinical description of a representative case. I'm going to present a very important case study for all of you to see. I can't wait to show you the case study. This is right out of the research paper. This is all. If you know somebody with freaking MS, you better share with them this study or I'm going to be pissed. Guess it won't matter. I probably won't know if you don't tell them. But you should be pissed if you don't tell them. All right. We know, these medical researchers, we know that MS, multiple sclerosis, and most neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, ALS, and Alzheimer's, in general, are the result of multifactorial agents. Not genetics alone. We know there's a lot of stuff that causes this. To evaluate the role of toxic metals in MS and the efficacy of EDTA chelation therapy, we took advantage of two homozygous twin women. two identical twin girls. One they call IM and the other one they call EM. Characterized by a similar lifestyle, exposure to toxic metals from adolescence, an identical genetic profile. Okay, so to see if EDTA works, we are going to demonstrate with this case study two identical twin girls, women, who were diagnosed with MS, who are going to do two totally different therapies. Both developed multiple sclerosis at the ages of 15 and 19, respectively. After diagnosis via MRI, so they were diagnosed with MS from an MRI, both twins were treated with a drug called azathioprine. There you go. Azathioprine. Azathioprine is on the left. You'll see on the left at the bottom, that is an example of azathioprine is a generic name drug for Imuron. You see there on the bottom left. And is also the generic name of another drug, brand name Azasan. For MS. So just notice, look here, these are two drugs that they were immediately treated for at 15 to 19 years old after an MRI confirmed they had MS. Upon its discontinuation, when they stopped those two drugs I just showed you, EM, one of these twins, decided to receive immunomodulatory therapy with interferon beta, while IM opted for chelation therapy with the chelating agent EDTA. So these two identical twins, one's like, you know what? I want prescription drugs, interferon beta. And the other one's like, I don't want that. I want a chelating agent, EDTA. There's EDTA. In fact, it's the exact same form, calcium disodium EDTA. It's exactly the same as what you're reading about in this research study. There are different therapeutic choices allowed us researchers to compare and discuss the differential outcomes. Was there anything different in the EDTA group versus the interferon prescription FDA approved drug group? The presence of toxic metals in their hair, urine samples of both twins was assessed in our medical center. And in this research study, they show you the graphs. Let's read together what happens. Remember, they're diagnosed at 15 and 19, respectively, two twins, identical twins. At age 38 years old, both twins underwent a percutaneous transluminal angioplasty. I'm going to show you what that is. It's a procedure for the treatment of chronic cerebrospinal venous insufficiency, collapsed veins, or plaquing in their veins. All right, I'm going to show you what that is here. EM, one of the twins, benefited from the surgery in terms of improvement of her quality of life, while the other twin, abbreviated IM, did not improve. I just want you to know that. Now, what is percutaneous transluminal angioplasty? It's what I'm showing you on the screen. So It's where they insert a balloon with a stent to squish the plaque in your arteries that are reducing blood flow. And in the case of these women, it's in their brain. Because it was for chronic cerebrospinal venous insufficiency. Okay, so they put this stent in to these women with MS when they were 38 years old, both of them. So they'd been diagnosed with MS for like 20 years now. And one improved, the other one didn't, from that procedure. At age 39, 1 year later after that surgery, EM, one of the twins, was no longer able to walk and was therefore bedridden, but chose to continue both interferon beta and another drug called estroprogestinic treatment. Okay, I'll show you what that is. I want y'all to just watch here. EM, one of the twins, who decided to do interferon beta and the other drug, estroprogestinic treatment. Next statement. She died of a thromboembolism, a blood clot, when she was 40 years old, the very next year. So EM, they say above, if I go back to the last statement here, EM, they say, benefited from the surgery in terms of improvement of her quality of life when she was 38 years old and got this balloon stent surgery. The very next year at age 39, she's no longer able to walk, was therefore bedridden, but chose to continue the drugs, interferon beta and estroprogestinic treatment. And then the next year, she died of a blood clot, which is what the stent a year earlier, 2 years earlier from age 40 was supposed to prevent. So one of the twins died. Now, these are the drugs they're referencing. Betaferon is there on the left, interferon beta. And then you'll recognize what estroprogestinic treatment is. It's that contraceptive pills you take. Birth control pills is what all these young people are taking all over the world. That's what it is. That's what they're talking about. So this twin decides to do at age 39, interferon beta, like she was doing when she was first diagnosed when she was 15 or 19 years old, and discontinued it early on in life, and then decided to pick it up again when she was no longer able to walk and was bedridden. Let's look at the other twin. I am the other twin, has continued the EDTA chelation therapies and discontinued the birth control pill treatment. She is still alive at the age of 46 and in good health. In particular, she is able to walk without aid and is self-sufficient. Anybody with MS, ask your medical doctor if EDTA is right for you or your loved one. There it is. Now this is the medical researchers, not me. The different outcomes: a person dying, unable to walk, being bedridden, and then ends up dying and has blood clots, even when treated for blood clots with a surgery. The different outcomes may delineate the possibility that the administration of drugs that orient the immune system response could have negatively affected fragile, vulnerable subjects who may benefit from therapies directly targeting the root cause agents, toxic metals in this case, encouraging the management of chelating agents like EDTA. They're actually saying it's not lost on us. The drugs, interferon beta that they're just talking about, the birth control pills, the mannitol, Keppra, propofol, these drugs might be causing these fragile, vulnerable subjects to die young or have worse outcomes because they're not addressing the disease-causing root cause problems, which is the term etiological agent. Those are the toxic metals they're talking about. The drugs don't address those. So they're saying we might need to encourage the management of chelating agents like EDTA for people with MS, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and ALS. Yeah, you should. That's EDTA. Here's our taurine I want to show you. One capsule has 500 milligrams. Is it right for you with traumatic brain injuries? Yes. Remember, here I showed you the two biggest pro-inflammation markers in the brain of somebody with a traumatic brain injury, even a concussion or a fall. Elderly, young, doesn't matter. Interleukin-1 alpha, interleukin-1 beta are all reduced between days 1 and 7 with taurine alone. Our multivitamin gummies, we just highlighted on there. There's inositol right there on the screen. We just wanted to show you that. And this is our calcium disodium EDTA. There it is. Go get it. I'm Dr. Artis. This is the Dr. Artis Show. Remember, choline. Choline's in our, I didn't show you on here, but choline's inside of our Hydrate Complete. It's in our child's multivitamin gummy. There's also CDP choline online you can go buy. There's other forms of choline. If you enjoyed this, scan the QR code, put in your email. We'll be able to notify you whenever, wherever we're going to be the following week. I hope you've enjoyed part one with the incredible Hall of Famer, NFL Super Bowl champion, Mike Singletary of the Chicago Bears. I hope you enjoyed that organic conversation. That was very exciting for me. A very real topic that affects millions of people. And him and I are both committed to seeing improvements to your recovery and prevention of worsening long-term health effects from any traumatic brain injuries or falls. I hope you enjoyed part two. This is the medical information about traumatic brain injuries, the various types, and the natural antidotes, how I would recommend you start the healing process ASAP. I'm Dr. Artis. God bless you all. We will see you next time on the Dr. Artis Show. Thanks for watching this week's episode. Visit thedrartisshow.com/follow for my official social media channels and free healing resources. Beware of fraud accounts. Neither I nor my company will ever ask you for money, crypto, or personal information through your social media or DMs. Like this video and share with a friend. And if you're not already, subscribe and follow along so you don't miss any updates from me, the only real Dr. Brian Artis. And remember, nature always wins.